You're listening to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for tuning in to the newest episode of the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Soaker. This episode is being released on August 15th, 2024. And this week, we're talking about a recent comment made by Tim Walz, the Democrat nominee for vice president, in which he likened socialism to neighborliness. Now, I try not to get into political discussions here on the podcast, but comments like this attempt to equate this political ideology with the teachings of Jesus to love your neighbor as yourself. So, is socialism just being a good neighbor, or is it something different? We're going to talk about that in our episode today, not from a political perspective, but a biblical perspective. For links to some related materials, check out the show notes for this episode at plainbibleteaching.com/podcast/08-15-24. And now for our discussion this week. Here's the clip from the interview in which the vice presidential candidate made this comment.
But we can get out there, reach out, make the case. And for one thing, don't ever shy away from our progressive values. One person's socialism is another person's neighborliness.
Well, is he right? Is socialism, in essence, a way for us to be neighborly toward one another? There's a few points I want us to consider about this question. First, what is socialism? In a nutshell, socialism is the belief that a central national government ought to oversee and control all aspects of the economy, rather than leaving private businesses and individuals to conduct their affairs and their business as they see fit. It is rooted in the notion that all property and wealth is to be shared, and the national government is the entity which determines how they are to be shared. And of necessity, socialism demands a strong, centralized government in order for it to be able to function the way that it is intended. Now, personally, that does not sound neighborly to me, but what does it mean to be neighborly? What are we talking about when we use that type of language? Well, at least from a biblical perspective, we can start with Jesus' teaching about loving our neighbor. Notice what it says in Luke chapter 10. And a lawyer stood up and put him to the test, saying, "Teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life?" And he said to him, "What is written in the law? How does it read to you?" And he answered, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself." And he said to him, "You have answered correctly. Do this, and you will live." Now, when the lawyer questioned him about this, Jesus told the parable of the Good Samaritan to explain how this worked or what he meant by this. Jesus replied and said, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell among robbers. They stripped him and beat him and went away, leaving him half dead. And by chance, a priest was going down on that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. Likewise, a Levite also, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan who was on a journey came upon him, and when he saw him, he felt compassion and came up to him and bandaged up his wounds, pouring oil and wine on them. And he put him on his own beast and brought him to an inn and took care of him. On the next day, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper and said, 'Take care of him, and whatever more you spend when I return, I will repay you.' Which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell into the robber's hands?" And he said, "The one who showed mercy toward him." Then Jesus said to him, "Go and do the same." So how did the Good Samaritan prove to be a neighbor to this man who fell among the robbers? He stopped to help. He used his own resources to care for him. He did not expect others to foot the bill for his kindness. And the text says he promised to repay the innkeeper rather than expect the innkeeper was going to help just because he wanted him to help. There is nothing in there about any kind of government intervention. No government program to help the poor. No government funding for victims of robbery. No government assistance for the innkeeper who provided lodging for him. Well, why not? By its very nature, government cannot do anything unless they first take from others. This is what Samuel warned the Israelites about when they called for a king. He said, "This will be the procedure of the king who will reign over you. He will take your sons and place them for himself in his chariots among his horsemen, and they will run before the chariots. He will appoint for himself commanders of thousands and of fifties, and some to do his plowing and to reap his harvest and to make his weapons of war and equipment for his chariots. He will also take your daughters for perfumers and cooks and bakers. He will take the best of your fields and your vineyards and your olive groves and give them to his servants. He will take a tenth of your seed and of your vineyards and give them to his officers and to his servants. He will also take your male servants and your female servants and your best young men and your donkeys and use them for his work. He will take a tenth of your flocks and you yourselves will become his servants." There is nothing neighborly about calling for civil authorities to take from your neighbor in order to help others. Jesus said, you are to help others. Remember what James wrote. "Pure and undefiled in the sight of our God and Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself unstained by the world." During the controversy over institutionalism, brethren often pointed out that James was talking about individual responsibility. This was not the church's work. It was the work of individuals. Notice the context beginning in the verse right before this. "If anyone thinks himself to be religious and yet does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this man's religion is worthless. Pure and undefiled religion in the sight of our God and Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their distress and to keep oneself unstained by the world." In the same way, we could say that this is our individual responsibility, not the government's work. That was never what God intended. Yet so many people, including members of the church, believe that we can fulfill our responsibility to help others by calling upon civil authorities to help them. No, Jesus said, you are to help others. And third, what should we expect if government does try to take on the work of being neighborly on our behalf? Well, number one, we can expect them to do an inadequate job at helping others. The wise man said, "If you see the oppression of the poor and denial of justice and righteousness in the province, do not be shocked at the sight, for one official watches over another official, and there are higher officials over them." He was describing a large government bureaucracy, which was supposedly to do good and to help and to make things better, but what actually happened? It didn't help. It didn't change anything. And the poor were still poor, the oppressed were still oppressed, and the solution that everyone thought this was going to be didn't materialize. Number two, we can expect people to start to look to government leaders as the source of all good things rather than God. This is what happened with Herod in Acts chapter 12. "Now he was very angry with the people of Tyre and Sidon, and with one accord they came to him, and having won over Blastus the king's chamberlain, they were asking for peace, because their country was fed by the king's country. On an appointed day, Herod, having put on his royal apparel, took his seat on the rostrum and began delivering an address to them. The people kept crying out, 'The voice of a god and not of a man.'" They were dependent on Herod. They had forgotten that God is the source of all blessings. So they were dependent on Herod. So how did they praise him? They praised him as a god and not as a man. And the same thing happens today when people look to government officials or government leaders or even government as a whole as this is the source of our livelihood, this is the source of everything we need in this life. They look to them as God rather than a servant of God as is described in the scriptures. And number three, we can expect that it will be more difficult for us to help others when government takes on this role that God never gave them, because of the greater burden inherent in a system like socialism. Socialism requires a large national government. What happens when you have a bigger and bigger government? Well, what Samuel warned about, that leaders will take and take and take, which makes it more difficult for us to have the resources and the ability to help those that we see fit. Now, we still need to do what we can, but it does make it more difficult when the authorities decide we're going to take on this work rather than leaving us to do that work ourselves. So in summary, Is socialism just another name for neighborliness? No. In fact, if anything, it serves as an obstacle for people to be a good neighbor for others. But whether that obstacle is there or not, we need to do what we can to be good neighbors to those who are around us. But the bottom line is that this is certainly not what Jesus taught when he talked about being a good neighbor. Do not be fooled by politicians and false teachers and anyone else who tries to twist Jesus' words and make it sound like an endorsement for something that he never taught. That's all for this week. Thank you for listening to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. Hope you found this to be interesting, informative, and helpful. For links to some related materials, check out the show notes for this episode at plainbibleteaching.com/podcast/08-1524. One of the links I will include in the show notes is to a book written by a preacher named W.F. Lemons titled The Evils of Socialism. That book was not written recently. That book was written back in 1912. This issue has been around for a long time, and gospel preachers have been addressing it for a long time because of the spiritual implications of it. So if you're interested in checking that out, I'll have that linked in the show notes along with some other materials. But if you have a moment to rate and review the podcast or share this with others that you think would be interested, that is always appreciated. And if you're listening to this, remember that we also upload video versions of the podcast to the Plain Bible Teaching YouTube channel. So if you prefer to watch this on video, that option is there for you. And if you are watching this on YouTube, please like this video and subscribe to the channel so you can see the other videos we post here from time to time. And if you see a news story or have some topic that you think would make for a good discussion, send that to me at andy@plainbibleteaching.com. Thanks again for listening, and I hope to talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to the Plain Bible Teaching Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others. Also, be sure to sign up for the Plain Bible Teaching Weekly Newsletter. This free newsletter will be delivered to your inbox each Friday with articles, podcasts, videos, sermon outlines, and more. Visit plainbibleteaching.com to subscribe today.